to do her any harm. So look here, I put her on the back of my bike and we went riding down by old man Johnson's farm. I said, now overcast days never turned me on, but something about the clouds and her mixed. She wasn't too bright, but I could tell when she kissed me, she knew how to get a kiss. She wore a
the second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented? Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect yourself without leaving your home? Colorectal cancer is highly preventable. Screening is important, safe, and most people have options. Ask your doctor which screening test is right for you. Learn more from the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at getscreened.org.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCC Pittsburgh. My name is Paul. I am the Mockster. Normally, you can hear my regular show Friday nights at 9. It's a show called Viva La Mock. I do encourage you to tune in, but you know what? I'm going to take the next half hour and just focus on one band and one band only. Which band is that? Magically, it's a little power pop trio that came out of the Boston, Mass area. The Blake Babies. We'll be right back.
You have a voice, you have a phone.
from their 1989 debut on independent record label Mammoth Records out of North Carolina. That's the Blake Babies with Rain here on 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh. I believe I forgot to tell you that the name of that debut is Earwig. Before that, Out There from their follow-up Sunburn album, and start off that entire set with Lament, which was also on Earwig, but also you could find that on the Slow Learner EP, or mini LP as it was called, that came out right before Earwig did. And you might have heard a familiar vocal in there, because Evan Dando briefly had joined the Blake Babies at that point in their career. There was a small breakup of the Lemonheads back around 1988, so Evan Dando was kind of a Blake Baby during that time. Now, the Blake Babies formed back around 1986 up in the Boston area. Juliana Hatfield was going to the Berklee School of Music, and the group got together. And believe it or not, their name came from Allen Ginsberg. They went to a reading of his at Harvard University, and the group raised their hand and said, "What should I call my band?" And he said, "Blake Babies." So they initially put out self-released EP on their own little Chewbud label called Nicely Nicely. And let's check out a track from that.
Thank you.
from an album that AllMusic.com described as the last great college rock album. That's the Blake Babies here on WRCT with I'm Not Your Mother, and the album in question is called Sunburn. And before I'm Not Your Mother, it was the Blake Babies doing a Stooges cover from the Earwig album. Yeah, that was the Stooges Loose, and start off the entire set with Blake Babies from their self-released 1987 album Nicely with Wipe It Up. In fact, the Blake Babies were not shy when it came to doing a cover song here and there on the recordings. In 1991, one of their final official releases, they put out their Rosie Jack World EP featuring this Temptations cover as the lead single.
Thank you.
from an album released in 2001 called God Bless the Blake Babies. Blake Babies would disappear. Now, the Blake Babies actually disbanded in 1992, and Juliana Hatfield went off on a solo career. John and Frieda started their own band called Antenna into the 1990s. And then in 1999, they got back together, did a few shows together, and started doing some recordings. And the result was this 2001 album called God Bless the Blake Babies. Before that, it was from that Rosie Jack World EP from 1991, Grassroots Temptation Eyes. I do want to remind you again that you can tune into my regular show, Viva La Mach, Friday nights at 9 p.m. here on WRCT. Speaking of shows, have you checked out the Deep Blues Hour? Yeah, it's an hour of classic and traditional blues music, but no, it's better than that because it's actually 3 hours of the Deep Blues Hour with Steve every Tuesday night from 7 until 10 p.m. That's right, 3 hours of classic and traditional blues right here on WRCT Pittsburgh. I got one more Blake Baby song to wrap up this Blake Baby's block of music for you, and I'm going back to my favorite Blake Baby song. It comes off the Sunburned album. It's Girl in a Box here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
I've got a girl in a box. Keep her under my bed. Sure must get hot in the summertime. I get her out. There's nothing else to do. There's nothing on TV when I can't see you. Wife don't mind if I give her a child. My wife don't mind, she thinks it's pretty wild. I've got this girl in a box. I got a girl in a box. I'll keep her till the day. I'll keep her. TV on and a beer in my hand, you by my side. I got a girl in a box. We play games. I'm anything I'm not, but I wanna be. Yeah, I wanna be. She'll be a slut, a dirty little whore, or the girl next door, or my bride instead, or I'll cut off her head if I want to. Yeah, I want to. I'll keep her till the
RCT, Pittsburgh. Thank you. WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful when Mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. I wanted a better relationship with Dad, so I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Alateen. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to alanon.org.
Well, if you've not been paying attention to the news for the last 20 or so hours, closer to 24 now, Vladimir Putin's Russia has started an invasion of Ukraine. And this is, I mean, listen, you know, at a certain point, when you see 190,000 troops massing at the border and you understand that it really is starting to not make sense merely as a posturing exercise, what Putin is doing, you start to consider this might be the precursor to some kind of an invasion. And almost exactly as predicted by many, Vladimir Putin creating a pretext for that invasion, using all sorts of fluffy language like peacekeeping to justify that invasion, doing it slowly, but a slow invasion is still an invasion, and that's what we have going on. Stock markets around the world, very rattled in anticipation of what may be very erratic energy prices, further supply chain delays, and all of the economic sequelae we will talk about once we get a sense of what the scope of this is going to be. But for the time being, sort of following the Georgia playbook, that's not Atlanta, Georgia, where Marjorie Taylor Greene is from. I'm talking about the country of Georgia. And possibly all of this meant to goad Ukraine into an overreaction to provide an even bigger pretext for a larger scale conflict. So let's kind of talk through what is going on. Yesterday, let me back up even. There are what we might call separatists in Ukraine. Separatist meaning they don't want to be part of Ukraine. They want to be part of Russia. Okay. Two of the regions in which there are such separatists are regions, and I'm going to do my best with the pronunciation here, the Donetsk region and the Luhansk region. These are on eastern Ukraine. You can pull it up on Google Maps and sort of take a look at where these are. So what Vladimir Putin did early yesterday, or actually it was early in the U.S., it was already kind of in the afternoon in Russia and Ukraine, is recognize those legitimately recognize those areas as independent. So Putin is saying, okay, it's part of Ukraine. Donetsk is part of Ukraine. Luhansk is part of Ukraine. But there are separatists there who, quote, really are Russian. They speak the language. They want to be part of Russia. So we're going to say those are independent regions, not Ukrainian regions. Now, if you're Ukraine, you say, wait, hold on. It's part of the country. It's Ukraine. But Putin says, no, those are independent regions. He then, hours later, after some mild sanctions were imposed by the EU and the United States on Putin for doing this, hours later, and really the sanctions were imposed on those regions rather than on what we might consider Russia proper, Putin says, hey, are the separatists in those, quote, independent areas that I've recognized, they are under attack. So we need to go in and send in peacekeeping forces into that area. It's the Putin playbook, hook, line and sinker. And there shouldn't really be anything surprising about it. This is what he was signaling for a long time. This is what various foreign policy analysts and experts were saying could be done for a long time. Some kind of pretext to then send in troops. But, you know, they call them peacekeeping. But it doesn't matter how slow it is. It doesn't matter if you say you're there to keep the peace. It is still fundamentally an invasion. We have video where you see tanks rolling down the road. This was yesterday, shortly after this announcement was made. And of course, the question now is, to what degree is this going to escalate or grow? Now, there are some people who we'll talk about in a little bit who are really going out of their way to sort of defend and normalize what Russia is doing. And you can be against American involvement and be against war and be against violence the way that I am, and still recognize that this is a classic Russian playbook, that this is an invasion, that Russia has no right to send tanks where they are sending tanks into the Donetsk and Luhansk regions. And just imagine a similar situation with Mexico or Quebec. These are not perfect analogies, but imagine that Mexico said, hey, you know what? There are people in Texas and Arizona. They look like us and they speak Spanish, our language, and they would prefer to be part of Mexico rather than the United States in Texas or Arizona. So we are recognizing these enclaves of Mexican Americans as Mexico. They are independent as far as Mexico is concerned. Well, in the U.S., we would say, yeah, but that's the United States. And I mean, they could go to Mexico. You're not stopping. If you want to welcome them, they could go. And then Mexico says, well, listen, on the basis of the independence of these separatists, we're going to send some peacekeeping troops in. Come on, guys. Nobody would go for it. Think of Quebec. Another analogy. These are not perfect analogies, but they are useful in thinking about this. In Quebec, there is a separatist movement. Imagine that that separatist movement in Quebec, Canada, said, well, we don't want to be our own country. We want to be part of the United States. Would the U.S. have any right to say, hey, those Quebec separatists, we think of them as independent because they really want to be part of us. Oh, they need us to help keep them safe. We're going to send some tanks there. Give me a break, guys. It's absolutely absurd. Now, we have video from the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, who is still kind of hedging a little bit as to the terms that are being used. Let's take a listen.
Well, the Russian troops has entered in Donbas. We consider Donbas part of Ukraine. So certainly, if the Russian troops entered into the Donbas, Ukrainian, I wouldn't say that a fully fledged invasion, but Russian troops are on the Ukrainian soil.
Yeah, they've invaded one part of Russia, is what we, I'm sorry, one part of Ukraine. The idea may be just do this and then back off. We don't know. And again, I hope that people recognize that all along I've said we can make assessments based on the signals, but we don't really know what Putin plans to do. This could just be one tiny step a day. So there's never any one day where it's like, wow, look at what happened. And then they move towards Kyiv. It's not completely clear. We are also going to have to consider what Putin's greater ideology here is. And it's sort of like the idea of pointing back to the former USSR. Ukraine is really important in Putin's mind in kind of recreating that. And we'll talk about that on the bonus show today. But also in terms of tactics, this is really kind of back to like an old war concept, which is, can you just change your country's borders by force? Since World War II and since the codification in international law that prohibits the threat or use of force against territorial integrity or political independence, we've seen few attempts to just change your country's border by force in this degree. Now, you could say, well, you know, there's a bunch of areas of the border in India where there are constant disputes and small skirmishes and little bits of land taken and given back. And it is changing the border in a way by force. In major ways, there have really only been four attempts since World War II. North Korea in 1950 trying to conquer South Korea. North Vietnam successfully conquering South Vietnam in 75. Indonesia annexing Timor-Leste in 75. And that very short-lived Iraqi annexation of Kuwait in 1990 before it was liberated in what we call the first Gulf War. So this is not super common since World War II. It will be important not only to watch what happens in Russia, but also to watch China's behavior and ambitions on the basis of what happens with Russia, Ukraine, because if Russia gets away with this, China's interest in similar action with Taiwan may increase. So a lot at play here. And in the immediate, it's going to remain extraordinarily chaotic. I want to look at some Fox News reaction to what is taking place in the Russia-Ukraine border area, particularly Donetsk and Luhansk, where Russia has now invaded slowly, but they've invaded. Fox News immediately went to blame Biden. And it's kind of, I mean, it's sort of funny, but it's not. I half jokingly tweeted yesterday afternoon before the invasion, how long until they say Trump never would have let Putin invade Ukraine? Or are they already saying it? And it actually happened very quickly, but was hilariously kind of spoiled by Fox News's own reporters. Here are some examples. Hannity spent the vast majority of his show last night blaming Joe Biden and saying that this is Biden's weakness is what has allowed this to happen in Russia, Ukraine, et cetera, et cetera. This ignores the fact that Trump was totally under the thumb of Putin, seemed enamored with Putin, as well as many other authoritarians during his presidency. This ignores that circumstances have been building for probably 20 years that relate to what is maybe even more that are now that relate to what's taking place on the Russia-Ukrainian border. But despite Hannity spending much of his show blaming Joe Biden, when reporter Jennifer Griffin pops up, she goes, you know, Sean, actually, what's going on predates this administration. Hannity sort of upended by his own reporters.
Sean, how we got to this point is a long story, and it predates the Biden administration. It goes back and includes mistakes made by every U.S. president since the Soviet Union fell apart, which Putin has said was the worst geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century.
Uh-oh. Well, that's not the narrative that Sean Hannity has been pushing on his show. Even Peter Doocy, who some consider one of the doofiest reporters out there, Hannity was complaining, oh, Joe Biden called the lid. He's not doing anything. Even Doocy has to tell Hannity, actually, even though it's nighttime, Biden is actively coordinating a response with our allies.
And the reason that we have not seen him yet is because they're trying to get everybody on board. And he's been working the phone, trying to get a bunch of allies to sign on to a statement with him.
But Sean Hannity said Biden's doing nothing and he called the lid and this is all his fault. This is, of course, so much bigger than Biden. But the response, similarly to when Joe Biden left Afghanistan, the narrative is Biden is in the wrong. Biden is the cause of problems. Biden is the reason we don't have a solution. And the very same people who were saying Biden's going to get us into wars and Biden's bad and Trump would have been better because Trump kept us out of wars. Those very same people are saying, well, Biden should have been more aggressive to prevent this from happening. So they are going to go with this narrative no matter what. Even a Republican senator, Ron Johnson, is doing the old blame Biden. This was him last night.
But the fact of the matter is, there's not much we can do right now. What we should have done is maintain strength. You do achieve peace with strength, but that's not just military strength. It's also economic strength. And as I was saying earlier, just about every action President Biden has taken has weakened America. It's emboldened our enemies. They're very optimistic. They're very aggressive. When they sense weakness, they're going to act.
So wait a second. The same people. This is a reminder, guys, to think, what are our principles and are we standing by them? The same people who were saying we should be more friendly with Russia. We should be friends with Putin. We should be friends with Russia. We should be nice. We don't want war with Russia. Now we're saying Biden's been too weak. He hasn't shown strength. He hasn't deterred. These people should not even be part of the conversation. They are just horrible people and they don't care about anything other than criticizing Democrats. They add nothing to the conversation. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more coverage of what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. The David Pakman Show is a viewer and listener supported independent media program. A little later today, in the context of upcoming CPAC, actually, we're going to talk about what the right gets right on funding independent media and activism that the left lacks. But just remember, it's a good idea to fund some shows that you like. It doesn't have to be this one, but I would love it if you signed up at joinpakman.com. Lots of great member benefits you can read about on our website. JoinPakman.com. So this is just absolutely fascinating. You may remember this Democratic congresswoman, former Democratic congresswoman named Tulsi Gabbard, who really had a faction of the left, like 2%, basically, 2% of the left was absolutely enamored with her. And she would use terms like regime change and endless wars in order to sort of convince people, I guess, that she was like maybe on the left. But the truth was, much of what she said was always reactionary. And since leaving Congress after her completely failed presidential bid, she's really become a darling of the right, appearing regularly on Fox News. She's going to be speaking at CPAC, which we'll get to a little bit later. And this is almost beyond parody. Tulsi appeared last night with Sean Hannity, and her take on the Russia-Ukraine situation was so outrageous, so unhinged, so unabashedly pro-Russia that propagandist Sean Hannity had to pump the brakes and say, hey, hold on a second. Putin has had these territorial ambitions for a very long time here. It's not just about security. Tulsi appearing and saying, oh, what Putin's doing is that he's protecting Russia. What he's doing is for their security. And Hannity has to be like, listen, Putin's had these territorial ambitions for a long time and says Ukraine's not even a country. When Hannity makes more sense than Tulsi, you know she's nuts. Take a look at this.
Understanding the world that we live in and not the world that maybe some people wished existed. And that reality is Putin has made very clear all along that their security in his mind is what's at stake here. And they
but
do not want to see
interrupt you,
U.S. and NATO.
Putin also said Ukraine is not a country.
Right.
And he has been saying this going back many, many years.
Right.
So this has been these territorial ambitions have existed a long time.
On the security component. They have. They go way back and they pre-exist. This
I love how she says, I want to focus on the security component. Right, because that's the component that's interesting to you. She is so unhinged that Hannity has to say, hey, Tulsi, that there's kind of like other realities here that you're not living in. And I'm going to try to pull you back towards them. Like Hannity saying your pro-Russian propaganda is a bit too much. This is when a friend would be like, Tulsi, you might want to sit this one out, when Hannity has to slow you down. And of course, it is once again a reminder of all the people that got bamboozled by Gabbard into thinking she's some kind of she's speaking truth to power, or she's on the left. She's a true progressive, the last real liberal or whatever. And listen, Hillary Clinton's not likable. And it's very popular to dislike Hillary Clinton. But when Hillary said, maybe Russians are grooming Tulsi for a third party run, I don't think Hillary was literally correct. But Hillary's instincts about Tulsi were completely right. I mean, it is at the end of the day, I actually wonder, does Tulsi believe this stuff? Or does she just want attention? Is this a character that she's playing? You know, we've speculated that Candace Owens, for example, is not really this ignorant right wing loon, that it's more of a character she's developed for profit. We've wondered, did 40-year-old, then 40-year-old Dave Rubin really go from being a Bernie supporter to a Trump supporter through some kind of genuine political awakening? Or was it because of the money that came attached with saying, I've quit being on the left? I don't know. I don't know if Tulsi believes this stuff or is just saying it because it's developing this profitable character for her. I don't even know if it's profitable. But what I can tell you for sure is that when Hannity is slowing down your pro-Putin propaganda and you're supposedly on the left, you've really got to be evaluating sort of like what positions you're staking out here. And unfortunately, there are people who have sort of woken up to the scam of Tulsi Gabbard. Of that 2% of the left that fell for her, maybe 1%, you know, half of it has woken up and is like, oh, my God, that was really, really bad. And I've seen some people publicly even apologize for it. But some people are still falling for it. And if you want to see examples of it, go to my Twitter, D Pacman, look at my post about Tulsi speaking at CPAC. And then just read the comments, and you'll see the degree to which people are still unhinged here and have completely fallen for it. Really going mask off here. And I mean, good job, I guess, to Sean Hannity for shutting it down. Now, Let's go from Hannity to another Fox News propagandist, Tucker Carlson. How is he reacting to the Russian invasion of Ukraine? Well, he's doing it by siding with Vladimir Putin, as Vladimir Putin quite literally was invading Ukraine yesterday. Tucker Carlson came out and said, hey, Ukraine isn't even a democracy. It's not even a democracy. Implicitly justifying the Russian invasion. Here is Tucker last night.
Ukraine is not even a democracy, despite what Joe Biden endlessly claims. Ukraine is a corrupt Eastern European autocracy that has spent millions of dollars lobbying politicians in Washington and, by the way, made Joe Biden's family rich.
Okay, so Tucker isn't wrong in the sense that Ukraine is a corrupt autocracy, but Russia is even more of a corrupt autocracy. So justifying the more corrupt autocracy invading the less corrupt autocracy in this way really doesn't make any sense. And, you know, let's dig into this a little bit more. Whether we call something a democracy is very binary. The point is there are major issues in Ukraine, major issues with the rule of law, major issues with the administration of justice in Ukraine. Women's rights are kind of a disaster in Ukraine. Freedom of expression, hate crimes are out of control in Ukraine. You know, there are real serious issues in Ukraine. But number one, those issues are worse in Russia. But that's kind of whataboutism. So let's not even focus on that. It's kind of weird for Tucker to justify Russia's invasion of Ukraine over things that Russia has a worse record on. But in a sense, it's whataboutism. The real issue is Tucker implicitly invalidating Ukraine's sovereignty and saying Putin can decide what happens in Ukraine. If Putin decides that Ukraine is corrupt, Putin can invade. That's really the issue. The implied point is that Ukraine isn't even a democracy, so therefore it's okay for Putin to invade. Everything he says about Ukraine applies to Russia 10 times over. Is Russia a democracy? Is Putin not corrupt? Is there freedom of the press in Russia? Come on, come on. And the U.S. propaganda machine sails full speed ahead. And it to some degree, I feel like we don't even have like a real defense against this type of propaganda. It has pervaded, and so many people are literally rooting for Putin and Russia here and against Joe Biden, which is a very strange way of showing how America first you are, as they claim to be. Also funny is that the right wingers accusing Ukraine of not being a democracy are the people who have been accepting Trump's efforts to undermine American democracy. I mean, the number of hypocrisies and contradictions is stunning. The very same people who, despite Joe Biden winning in 2020, said, well, I don't know that he really won, and it would have been fine for Pence to overturn it. It would have been fine for the rioters to prevent the certification to try to give Trump another opportunity. It would have been fine for states to send alternate electors, as Arizona and some other states were thinking of doing as part of the so-called Green Bay sweep. They have undermined American democracy at every opportunity and now are justifying Putin's invasion of Ukraine by saying, well, Ukraine's not really a democracy. Come on. Now, think back to the second Iraq war in 2003. In 2003, when people like me were saying this war doesn't make any sense, we shouldn't be doing this, this is a terrible idea, Iraq didn't even have weapons of mass destruction, the entire intelligence case made for going into Iraq is bogus, these right wingers were saying you're rooting against America. You're rooting against our troops. You're defending Saddam. And they were wrong, of course. Saddam was a bad guy, but things were relatively stable geopolitically with his presence in Iraq. But he didn't have anything to do with 9/11, and he didn't have weapons of mass destruction. We weren't rooting against the U.S. We were saying, let's not even get involved in this. Those people who said, you're rooting against the U.S., they are literally defending and supporting Putin now. And we saw clips from Tucker there are clips from Hannity. Here's one other bizarre clip from last night's Tucker Carlson show where he says he sent a letter to both the Russian and Ukrainian presidents, as well as to Congressman David Cicilline, and that Cicilline is repulsive, but hopefully he'll agree to be interviewed. Like, it's beyond parody.
So today we sent another letter to Vladimir Putin asking for an interview. We hope we get it. We also sent a message to the president of Ukraine. We would like that interview, too.
Okay.
Now, neither one of these men runs a democracy by traditional American standards. Both of them are tyrants.
True.
But they're in the news, and we would love to talk to them. An interview is hardly an endorsement. In that same spirit, we've also reached out to Congressman Cicilline's office, inviting him on this show. David Cicilline is a former mafia lawyer who represents one of our most corrupt states. He is a repulsive man. Is it immoral to talk to him? No, it's not immoral. It would be interesting. And so we hope Congressman Cicilline accepts our invitation.
I mean, it's beyond parody. The congressman is a repulsive man, and we hope that he accepts our invitation to be interviewed. We've dealt with booking what we might call hostile or adversarial guests. One of the things we never do is to say we find you repulsive in asking for the interview. I know Tucker has a whole team of people over there. I would suggest not violently, with rhetoric, but not physically, attacking the character of the people that you're trying to interview. We'll have these clips on our Instagram if you're just listening today. Find us on Instagram at David Pakman Show. This is a super interesting story that we've actually been covering for several months. There's this guy named Neil Cavuto. He's a host on Fox News, Fox Business. And Neil Cavuto had cancer, has multiple sclerosis, and recently got COVID for the second time, and he ended up in the ICU. And the interesting thing about Neil Cavuto is when he came back from his first bout with COVID, which was much less serious, he kind of admonished people in his audience for sending him messages about how they want him to die. And he kind of confronted his own audience and said, go and get the vaccine. He now has again come back and called out his own audience after he ended up very seriously ill with COVID. And he says, I was told, had I not been vaccinated, I wouldn't even be here. I'm just telling it to you the way it is. And the fact that this guy constantly has to call out his own audience for their false beliefs is really something, but good for him for doing it. Check out what he had to say yesterday.
So I wasn't really hiding anything. I just felt that I wasn't the story. The stories on this show were and are the story. It's about you. It's not about me. Just like this show. My opinions don't matter. You matter. The news matters. But this did drag on a long time for me. So you really do deserve an explanation from me. And here goes. I did get COVID again, but a far, far more serious strand, what doctors call COVID pneumonia. It landed me in intensive care for quite a while, and it really was touch and go. Some of you who wanted to put me out of my misery darn near got what you wished for. So sorry to disappoint you, but no, the vaccine didn't cause that. That grassy knoll theory has come up a lot. My very compromised immune system did. Because I've had cancer, and right now I have multiple sclerosis, I'm among the vulnerable 3%ers, or so of the population, that cannot sustain the full benefits of a vaccine. In other words, it simply doesn't last. But let me be clear, doctors.